they were staying in a garage with a bucket toilet. And so those things, he would never complain about things that affected him, but he would speak to the humiliation, the indignity of it all. And so he is a man who was called to the priesthood because he's a deeply spiritual person, but was called to be a prophet for social justice. And he never stopped, but he became even more public in his engagement with activism when he was the SACC Secretary General. That was at the height of the apartheid brutality. And he made sure that no way would people believe that the church that he led through the SACC would be silent when God's people were being humiliated.
And how did his activism affect his work as a cleric?
It enhanced his work as a cleric. He got, when I first met him, we were young activists of the Black Consciousness Movement, and he came to visit us in King Williamstown, where we had our first big community project, and I was the medical officer in charge of Zanempilo Community Health Center. Because he wasn't au fait with what we were talking about the need for mental liberation from mental slavery. Mm. And when we talked through that, he could see it immediately. So he was a great supporter of this healing of the humiliation of the past, the assertion of one's dignity because you are God's creature, but also the ungodliness of discrimination in whatever form, right, whether it was on the basis of racism, sexism, or homophobia, or xenophobia, all wrong. And so he had this coherence of values that exemplified what Ubuntu is about. And he understood it and lived it in every way he expressed himself.
What was his view of the world in his later years, especially in the last 4 years, as some of the injustices that he fought against today? Did he still maintain that hope for a world free of injustice, oppression, and exploitation?
Absolutely, because he said publicly several times he's a prisoner of hope. The fact that people are failing to rise to their responsibilities as leaders, whether it's in the public sector, in the private sector, or in people's personal lives, doesn't stop him from not just hoping, but championing the need for people to stand up and be the best version that God created them to be. And so it is that passion that drove him, and of course his courage. I mean, he was a very small man, but as his wife said, he had a heart of a lion. When there was injustice, as he did during the 80s when people were necklaced, he didn't care who was committing the atrocity. He would just tear into the crowd and pull out the victim. Mm. I mean, that was something very few people could have even contemplated, let alone done.
Dr. Mampela, as we end our conversation today, I just wanted to ask you, what is the legacy? What would you say is the legacy of Dr. Tutu? How will history remember him?
History will remember him as a man who recognized that unless human beings come to grips with what it means to be human and understand that to be human is to be connected to other human beings and to the rest of God's creation, and live every day to be a strong contributor to that creation, you will have missed your vocation in life. So we, as the IP Trust and the Desmond and Leah Tutu Foundation, are working furious to make sure that we capture and we document and we preserve and we make accessible to the world this man's incredible legacy in whatever way we can.